5:04 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Brad Barnes, Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker. BT has taken off for Cardinal pregame on FS Midwest. Cards and A's tonight at the ballpark. Well, we've got Take It or Leave It coming up in a moment. Send in your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. But before we get to that, we see a lot of things on this show that are questionable. But for the most part, we know where to draw the line. Apparently, Kevin Keatsman of 810 WHB in Kansas City does not understand that concept.
Andy Reid does not have a great record of fixing players. He doesn't. Discipline is not his thing. It did not work out particularly well in his family life. And that needs to be added to this. As we're talking about the Chiefs, he wasn't real great at that either. He's had a lot of things go bad on him. Family and players. He is not good at fixing people. He is not good at discipline. That is not his strength. His strength is designing football plays.
Reid had sons that wound up in jail for drug infractions, and one son who committed suicide. That's not at the very best. That's not a very sensitive approach to take. And Keatsman is saying, it never even entered my mind that somebody would think to connect his son that passed away tragically with what I was saying.
Then what family was he talking about?
There you go.
Okay. See, and I don't know if he has lost his job, but my understanding is he probably will not because he's a part owner of that station.
Right.
So, cool, man.
And Keatsman did make an apology on Twitter and said his words were misinterpreted.
Oh, they always are, man.
Old taken out of context there.
Oh, of course. It's always taken out of context, even though we have the entire context available to us, like the audio, which we can listen to, like we just did. But we're all stupid.
Ronji, with a win over Vanderbilt tonight, the University of Michigan can win the College World Series. Now, as National League and as Cardinal fans, we knew that Ted Simmons and Mike Matheny and Barry Larkin all played at the University of Michigan. Take it or leave it, you knew that in the early 1900s, Hall of Famers Charlie Gehringer and George Sisler played at Michigan.
Leave it.
Had no idea. They have a pretty
totally
storied baseball history.
Vandy's got a pretty good recent history, at least.
Yeah, David Price.
Mm-hmm. Fulmer.
Mm-hmm.
Dansby Swanson, right? He was a Vandy guy, wasn't he?
He was, right.
Yeah, that's two... apparently, Michigan is a good baseball school. I was not aware of it. But that university, and I hate to admit it because I have a lot of friends who are Michigan fans and I don't want anything good for them, but their all-around athletics programs, they compete in everything. And in some sports, they have national title hopes.
You know, one alum who has done a lot for them is Jim Abbott. He's really given them a hand.
Randy... That's really terrible.
What?
To say something like that.
Well, he's helped out. He's financially.
And
they needed help.
I think that you came into this segment talking about Michigan, and you were armed with that joke.
Well done. Well played, sir.
I'm sorry. So Adam Eaton, who is he's just a swell guy. Just a couple of days ago in... an article that was written in, I believe, well, NBC Sports picked it up. So I'll just tell you his quotes. Talking about the lives of minor league ball players. And we've talked about it a little bit over the last several months. And it's become more and more of a topic, especially since the push to make players get paid a minimum wage. Mm-hmm. A lot of minor league players, in fact, most of them are not doing very well. They struggle. BT can tell you. If you didn't get that big signing bonus of a million or two, you can struggle big time finding housing and just eating the minimal stuff. Well, he doesn't think that's such a bad thing. This is him. Adam Eaton says, I think it's difficult, yes, and it's easy for me to say that because of where I am, but I wouldn't be where I am without it. If I financially am supported down there and financially can make a living and not have to get to the big leagues, I think I'm a little more comfortable. I think that I might not work as hard. Because I know I'm getting a decent paycheck every 2 weeks and may not push myself nearly as hard.
Mm.
Take it or leave it. If you're a minor league ball player and you're making like $40,000 or $50,000 a year, you're not going to work hard to get to the big leagues.
Leave that.
I'm going to leave that too. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard an athlete say. everybody who's at the minor league level is trying to get to the big leagues, and it's not because they're struggling financially. It's because that's what they're in it for. The whole purpose of being a minor leaguer is to hopefully become a big leaguer someday. That's just monumentally dumb.
You got to question the guy's competitiveness, too. When he says stuff like that, that's obviously crept into his mind that, hey, I can be comfortable.
That's who would ever say that? Crazy. And even if they did, so what? Let him, right? If a guy is like, hey, I'm making 40 to be a minor leaguer, this is good for me, then let him do that. That's totally up to him. But also, Adam Eaton is the guy who said a 13-year-old kid was a clubhouse leader.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And Drake LaRoche.
Big Sims, what do you got for us?
Guys, take it or leave it. The Cardinals front office will make no significant changes to the bullpen this season.
I'll take that. I'm using the word significant, meaning closer, eighth inning guy. I will take that.
Okay. I'll take that too, but I do think they address it.
I think they do something.
I just don't.
The old Mike DeJean kind of pickup.
Yeah,
Jonathan Broxton, that kind of thing.
It's not going to be a Doolittle or Ken Giles like
right.
we were talking about earlier.
Agreed.
Take it or leave it. Before he retires, Ryan O'Reilly wears the C for the Blues.
That would mean Petro's gone.
I'm going to leave it.
So I'm going to leave it too.
Because I do think that Petro, his career will equal O'Reilly's here in St. Louis.
Take it or leave it. Steven Piscotty homers at least once during this series.
Take it.
You know what?
It's only a two-game series.
Why not?
Yeah, he'll homer tonight.
But he won't take it or leave it. He'll get an ovation after the home run.
He'll get a standing O when he steps to the plate the first time.
And that will be it.
Yes, take it.
I agree. Take it.
Take it or leave it. James Harden got robbed of another MVP award.
Yeah, I'll take that. He was pretty darn valuable.
Yeah, he was efficient. As an offensive player.
Bucks had the best record, though, right?
Yeah. Giannis is good.
Of those
man.
Two?
He's my favorite right now.
Take it or leave it, Jordan Binnington makes more than $4.5 million next season.
That's a great over-under.
Ooh. I'm going to leave it. I bet it's up to four.
Yeah. I'm going to say 4.26 in that area. So he's making more than Jake Allen, but not something that completely demolishes your salary cap.
And take it or leave it, there will be at least three players on the Stanley Cup winning Blues roster that will have their number retired.
Oh.
90 and 91, I'll go with. And I'm going to leave it. I'm going to say those are the only ones.
I will take that, what you said, but I don't think it's going to be three. But speaking of 91, we did have somebody text in who we were talking about his arthroscopic knee surgery mm-hmm. that he just had today. And in 4 weeks, he's going to be reevaluated. And somebody texted in and said, oh, but it has nothing to do with Brad Marchand. Take it or leave it, it does have something to do with that player.
Yeah, I'll take that.
And another take it or leave it. And I'm not into injuring players just to injure them. Mm-hmm. But somebody like that, is it okay to take a run at
yes.
Brad Marchand just because that's his M.O.?
Take him out.
I'm taking that, too.
One more for you guys. Take it or leave it, the Cardinals have the best August in Major League Baseball.
Leave it. I'd like to take it, but
I don't think so.
Let me check here.
Couple people sending some texts in saying that's when they get hot. Just a matter
it's
of time.
It's hot here in St. Louis then.
That's right. The heat is on.
I want to check the
yeah.
schedule quick. I know that they play the Brewers a couple of times in that month, but let me just check and see. And I will tell you in 5 seconds. Okay, you've got the Cubs. Oh, you're back at Oakland, at the Dodgers, Pirates, at Royals, at Reds, Brewers here, Rockies here, Brewers there, Reds. I'm going to leave it.
I will leave it too.
The text line wants Petro to get his number retired as well. They say 90, 91, and 27.
I'm cool with that. The Blues are pretty well set now on guys, before they get their number retired, being in the Hall of Fame. And I don't know that Petro's a Hall of Famer. Because while I think he's a top 15 defenseman, many times a top 10 defenseman, I don't think he's a top 3 defenseman and hasn't been yet in his career.
Do you get your number retired just by virtue of being the first captain to raise the cup? I don't think so either.
No. Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Next up, Marp received a contract extension from the Cardinals near the start of the season, and it might be one that comes back to bite them. That's next on 101 ESPN. That is the Cardinal third baseman, Matt Carpenter, who last year, until May 15th, was not good. He was hitting 140 in the 140 area as of May 15th and then took off, had an unbelievable run, and wound up hitting better than 250, led the Cardinals with 36 home runs, and had a terrific season overall, especially when you consider the start. Ron, you look now at where the Cardinals are. They're closing in on the midpoint of the season. We are almost to July. It's June 25th today, and the guy just isn't getting any better. He's hitting just over 200, and it's hard to imagine that a guy who's been this struggling this much through virtually half of a season is going to wind up turning it around like he did last year with the blink. I know he just said that he thinks he can get better, but I wonder.
It's possible he does. I would expect that what we're seeing from him right now is not what he's going to be for the remainder of the year, all year long. I do expect that there's going to be some improvement. What worries me is whether or not the improvement's going to be dramatic enough, and is it going to happen soon enough to make a difference for the team? And he went through the same thing last year, that's true, but by now, he was starting to turn it around. Yeah, I mean, this was different. And he also had a rough September last year. Mm-hmm. So now we're going on, really, like 4.5 months of play. Well, I guess, 3 months, 3.5 months of play, where he's just been substandard. And that, to me, is concerning. And the other part that's concerning is the fact we're on the wrong side of 30. Now, that doesn't always mean everything to every player. But right now, when you're over 30 years old, which is what he is, and I believe his contract is going to be up at the age of 36?
He's 33 now.
Okay.
Marp is on the books for 14.5 this season, and then 18.5 person through 2022.
Person? What do you mean?
18.5 person through 2022 is what I was given.
That doesn't make any sense. 18.5 person. Oh, you know what I think this is?
What might it be?
A meetup. I believe it's supposed to say per season.
Oh.
We're missing a whole lot of letters.
Now I get it.
Yeah.
So we went through the entire offseason talking about why teams were not signing players. And one of the main reasons was the analytics movement had determined that players decline starting at the age of 30. Well, the Cardinals, and by the way, I was on board with both moves, gave the contract to Paul Goldschmidt, 32 years old during the during spring training, and gave the contract to 33-year-old Marp early in the season when they had an option year left at $18.5 million. I don't know why the Cardinals were in a rush to give him that deal through 2022 when – if he didn't perform this year, they could have just let him walk with that option, that team option at the end of 2019.
I know there's a track record for him, and the track record is he's been really productive. And maybe if you look to the beginning of last season and then the month of September last year and you think, okay, well, there's too much there to be concerned about, then I could see not wanting to do it. But at the same time, you are kind of locking up a position and taking care of something you won't have to worry about for the next few years. You know what I'm saying? Which I think mm-hmm. is a lot to do with why they gave him that deal. They figure, okay, we've got third base the first base is handled by Goldschmidt now, but they've got third base locked up. It's not something they have to worry about until Nolan Gorman is hopefully ready to go. And we don't know what he's going to be eventually, but we think he's going to be a pretty good player. So I think that's the thought process there. I don't hate the idea so much, but there is reason to be concerned, and I think there was reason to be concerned when they gave him the deal. I just think they were operating from a, we're not going to have this to worry about, at least for the next few seasons. We've got that position taken care of, and we'll address other needs. But the thing is, they have to address the other needs.
Yeah.
Those things have to be taken care of. Otherwise, now you're really drowning because you're worried about multiple positions that are underperforming.
Carpenter is making 14.5 this season. I can actually see Matt Carpenter being willing to be a utility player. They talked about that for him at the beginning of last year. Never really materialized, but they talked about him playing first, second, and third. I don't see the Cardinals right now spending $14.5 million on a utility player and replacing him at third with somebody who's more productive. I really think that this is a scenario where the money is going to play, the contract is going to play, and I would be really surprised if the Cardinals would go out and get somebody to even supplement him, let alone replace him.
They haven't really done that before. So, I mean, you're not going to have this contract, which is paying him out from 2019 all the way through the end of the deal at 22, is paying him $53.5 million. They're not, they have never really operated in the way that they just take their losses. You know, they cut their losses and they go, look, it's just, it's not working out. So this is what your role is going to be. He's going to get playing time the remainder of this year. And I'm not necessarily sure that's the wrong thing to do unless they had a better option. If they had a guy who was ready to go, I would be all for at minimum splitting playing time with Carpenter and this other guy, but they don't have this other guy. Mm-hmm. I think if they were to acquire somebody, then he takes a back seat, but there's nothing in the way they've operated in the past that makes me think they're going to do that.
Carpenter's career low OPS in a full season is 750 in 2014. Since that 750 in 2014, when he led the league in walks, by the way, and had a 375 on base, he's had 871, 885, 835, and last year 897 OPSs. This year, through 74 games, and the Cardinals are four games away from the midpoint of the season, his OPS is 709. His on-base is 329. His career on-base is 374, and he's always been around there, if not significantly higher. His career on-bases will just go from his first full season, 365, 392, 375, 365, 380, 384, 374. This year, 329. His 380 slug is far and away a career low. And his StatCast numbers are not strong. They can't bring him upstairs now and say, hey, just keep doing what you're doing because you're unlucky. He's not unlucky this year. He's just not hitting
And he's part of a larger problem. It's not just Matt Carpenter. You've got a lot of guys on the team that are not hitting the ball hard. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they're either 14th or 15th in the National League in terms of hard hit balls this year. They're not making solid contact, and that is a team-wide problem. I guess you could put a lot of it on him because normally this is a guy who's producing for you, and normally he's the guy who's helping set the table. You know, he's not a guy who steals bases, but he gets on base. Mm-hmm. He gets on in front of, well, he should be ideally getting on in front of Paul Goldschmidt and now Paul DeJong, who's batting second a lot, but he's not doing that. So he's not helping alleviate any pressure from the guys behind him who hit in the order. So you mentioned that on base number. That's pretty alarming.
That's alarming.
That is 35 points under his second worst season, which was 365, and that's really good, and that was 4 years ago. He is significantly under that, and we're not talking about a small portion of this year. This is almost half of a baseball season. We are close to 50% of the way through this year, and this is what he's doing. I think that's incredibly alarming.
And hopefully the Cardinals can find a way to figure it out. Coming up, Craig Berube has a new contract, and the Cardinals are back at it tonight against Oakland. If you have any questions about those or anything else, send them in now to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. The Sports Six Pack is next on 101 ESPN. We do appreciate your texts to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. And with your questions for us, here's Big Sis.
Knowing what we know about the injuries to Alex Reyes and to Jordan Hicks, for the time being, who is the biggest loss if they never get back to what their expectations were, to that potential? Who do you think would be the biggest loss?
I would say it would be Alex Reyes. He was supposed to be a front of the rotation starter, number one starting pitcher at the major league level, and obviously hasn't come close to that because of injuries. I think that's a much greater loss than a potentially great closer.
Well, for sure. Anytime you get a guy who's going to go six, seven innings for you, hopefully, that means that's way more valuable to your franchise overall than a really, truly great closer. Even if the guy is automatic in the ninth inning, every team wants that. But, I mean, I would take a I would take a Max Scherzer over a Kenley Jansen from a couple of years ago every day of the week.
Me too.
So for next season, I think officially here in the next couple of weeks, 101 ESPN will be the home of the Blues. What changes can you expect or can the listeners expect with the Blues coming to 101?
You have crystal clear FM. You will have a station that nurtures the product throughout the day. One of the things that we can do as an all-sports station that KMOX can't is that we can be out at the rink for morning skates and tell you who the lines are going to be just as the players start their line rushes. And we can have an hour-long pregame show rather than a half hour. I think you'll have much more coverage, many more voices, and hopefully for you, much more knowledge of what's going on with the club.
I don't know. I always liked it when Rush talked Blues.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's it. We're gonna have a lot of programming here throughout the day. Like today, we had Wheeler and Anthony at the prospect camp, which is the kind of stuff we're gonna be gonna be doing. And oh, tomorrow and Thursday too.
Yeah,
they're there pretty much all week.
It's gonna be great.
That's awesome.
And once we get to the pregame show and the game and the postgame show, the bar has been set pretty high, and we will do our best to live up to that bar. And Curbs and Joey will be there with us, by the way, as the broadcasters for the Blues in 2019, 2020, and well beyond.
Curbs is good, and I know I've professed my love for Joey Vitale, but he's, dude, that guy, he gets it. He's really, really good.
Randy, you did ask Louis Korak earlier in the show about the restricted free agents for the Blues. Of those nine qualifiers, who gives you, or where are your greatest concerns among those nine?
For, in terms of being able to get them signed? Binnington would be number one for me in terms of my greatest level of concern because he's that guy that's waited a long time and he's 25. It's not like he's a 21-year-old and he's getting this his first good deal. He's 25 and I would think that he would want to strike while the iron is hot. So in terms of being able to negotiate a deal with him, I would guess that that will be the most difficult one.
I do believe there's a level of appreciation for the Blues allowing him the opportunity to do what he was able to do. But in the end, this is a business. And he's going to, it would be prudent for him to capitalize as best he can. My hope is that Jordan Binnington has got a really good, long career as a goaltender ahead of him, hopefully with the Blues. But there's also that possibility this is as good as he is ever going to be.
Yeah.
And maybe he never repeats this again. So he has to have that knowledge, or at least his agency has to have the knowledge that's possible. And knowing that's possible, you want to cash in as best you can, as early as you can.
So the Blues win the Stanley Cup. Craig Berube gets a three-year contract. Any chance at all? What's the scenario that he does not see the entire contract?
Based on the length of service, the average length of service for NHL coaches?
Very little chance. He's
very little chance that he sees the end of the deal.
He's here for the entire thing, man. It's only 3 years. Wait, that was the question, right?
What's the chance that he doesn't see the end or does?
What's the chance that he would not make it through the end of his contract?
No, he's all the way through. Like that 3 years, he's going to coach all the way through it.
He wins an Adams Trophy and he's done. You don't want to win Coach of the Year. Coaches in the NHL get devoured.
I think he gets the leeway because he won the Cup. I think he gets all three of those years.
No matter how,
even if that final year is really lousy, I bet they let him play it out.
What are the chances Marcell Ozuna is still a Cardinal next year?
50-50.
I think they're better than they were. I would have said no chance at the beginning of the season, but with him firing Scott Boras and with him telling Jim Hayes he wants to end his career here, I believe that now signs are pointing to him having a level of desire to come here. I'm not so sure about the Cardinals' desire or trust in him, desire to sign him to a contract because of their trust in him after he showed up at 250 in camp.
Yeah, let me adjust. Let me say 40-60 he stays. Mm-hmm. Because no matter, unless he is willing to take a tremendous discount, and you mentioned him firing his agent and seeming to want to stay here, I think the Cardinals could try to play that against him. If they feel like we need another piece, let's just stockpile as much talent as we can. That includes you, but we're not going to give you a ton of money. Do you want to stay? If he were to take that deal, and it's not like a max amount of dollars he would get in free agency, I think he would stick around. But the other problem is, are you afraid of what he is when you pay him? Are you afraid he's going to show up to camp 300 pounds next year?
I would be.
I would be, too. So I think if he gets a really team-friendly deal, he sticks around. So maybe 40%.
Randy, the people want to know, how's the tattoo feeling today?
Feels good. I've gone through this show and haven't even really thought about it being there. Last night, it kind of felt like sunburn, but I feel really good today. And that's in great part the reason that I chose Big Dave Canoy out at the Ink Spot in St. Peter's in Troy, because the people that I talk to that I trust said that he's the best in town, and he is. The work that he did was spectacular, and I feel great.
He did really good work on you.
Yeah.
And like we mentioned earlier, it's not even close to the most painful thing to happen to you in the last 24 hours.
No, it's not.
You took a spill on your bike?
Yeah, I got gravel from the Katy Trail embedded into my arm and legs and face. So, yeah, that hurt more.
So do you think you took the spill so that you forgot about the pain in your back?
No, there's no way. That thing just happened. I don't know if I wasn't paying attention, but I was just cruising right along 16, 17 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden it was on the ground.
I know I said this to you in the office, but somebody else texted in the exact same thing, that the weight of the tattoo has thrown you off kilter. You're off balance now.
I did fall to my left. I landed on my left side. Uh-huh. So it's a distinct possibility that 1/100th of an ounce of the tattoo could have happened.
Maybe that was early payment for your Abbott joke from
that
earlier.
Could have been.
That's what that was.
Was that improper?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have people who texted in about it.
They shouldn't text in because you'll never. Why waste their time? You'll never read it.
Well, see, that's exactly the reason you shouldn't do it, because people will text in terrible things about Abbott, who lost his arm. You know, stuff like
pitched one-handed.
Yeah. Like this text message from a 636. We don't want more of these. On the one hand, Abbott is a likable guy. See, and that's not funny.
It's not. No, I can't imagine that. And I was just laughing at the absurdity of that text because it's not funny. Somebody clearly thought it was, and I'm laughing at the absurd nature of that.
Or like the person from the 636 who said, those both seem like backhanded compliments. We don't need that stuff.
No.
We're above all of it.
Yeah. Thanks for your text. The Hot Shots text line 65780. Next up in the fast lane, the Blues have signed head coach Craig Berube and removed the interim tag. So what does this move mean going forward for the Blues? That's next on 101 ESPN. Tomorrow at 10 a.m., the Blues will officially introduce Craig Berube as their next head coach. Not interim head coach. He will have the label. And I will be there, Ronj, because ever since I got into this business, I have made it a point to get to Blues coach hiring press conferences. And I believe the only one I have missed is Davis Payne. I have gone from my first one being Jacques Demers to Jacques Martin to Brian Sutter to Bob Plager to Bob Berry to Mike Keenan, to Jimmy Roberts for a time, to Joel Quenneville, to Mike Kitchen, to Andy Murray. And then I missed Davis Payne. And then after Payne, I went to Hitch, and I went to Yo, and I'll go to this one. So I've been to a few coach hiring press conferences for the Blues. I do think, despite what I said in the last segment, that I don't think he'll make it to the third year, because that's just statistics in the NHL. I think if somebody does have the personality to make it for the long haul, a Hitch type run, and by the way, Craig Berube is a Ken Hitchcock protege, I think that Craig Berube has that sort of personality, his ability to deal with players, their respect for him because he played the game, the way he treats them. And even as a former enforcer, his willingness to accept the nuances of the game, in addition to the physical play that he loves, that you need to win in 2019-2020.
Every coach has a shelf life. I'm fully understanding of that. And in the NHL, a lot of times that shelf life is really, really short. So it would stand to reason that that anybody is not going to make it through a three-year contract. I do think this is a different circumstance, and I also understand things can change. You never know what's going to happen here in the next couple of years. My confidence is he's going to be just fine, that he will continue on at the pace he's been on, maybe not win another Stanley Cup, but I think he'll have the understanding of his players. I think they will like playing for him. I think he will put them in good positions to win as long as he is here. I think that's going to happen, but I do understand that sometimes, for whatever reason, personalities ultimately clash. It can happen here. Maybe it happens here. I hope not. And I'm not really afraid that that's going to happen. But I believe the other part of it is he is the first coach to ever bring a Stanley Cup to St. Yep. Louis. And I think because of it, even if things are not looking very good in year two or three from now, I think he's going to have the benefit of the doubt to remain in that position until the contract is over, and then they'll go from there. I really, truly believe that's going to happen, unless something significant happens in the locker room where there's just a butting of heads of him and a star player, whoever that is, and there just can't be a coexistence. I'm not really afraid that's going to happen, though.
I was going to say also, though, that he has the advantage of having worked with those young players with the Chicago Wolves. So the Blues know of his ability to work with young players. And if there is a veteran player who tries to make his voice bigger than the coaches, if the Blues can keep manufacturing young players, they can afford to make that choice because you can't keep everybody. And if you need to get rid of a veteran player because of that voice, then that's just the way it goes. Lou Korak joined us earlier here in the Fastlane on 101 ESPN and said players really appreciate his ability, Berube's ability to communicate with them.
He basically had an open invitation and told these guys, my door is always open, whether it's good or bad, you know, let's talk about it. And I think just from a player's perspective, you've got to appreciate that. And, what I found fascinating about him is the fact that, he pretty much treated all these guys as equals. I mean, you understand that, you know, a veteran's a veteran and they're going to have a little bit of leeway there more than some of the younger guys. But, I think the message was pretty clear to everybody. You know, I mean, he would pretty much outline to you, this is what I need from you. You need to do dot, 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 and dot. And if you can't, then, you know, we're going to have to address it.
And look at the playoffs and the finals when he got Sammy Blais back in there after 8 weeks and Sanford back in there after almost 3 months of not playing, but showed the confidence not only to put them in an emergency situation, but when they performed well, allow them to keep playing.
There's some good luck in every decision you make in a playoff run working. I don't care how good you are as a coach or how smart you are. You have to have a lot of good fortune go your way because sometimes you're going to make a call that makes the most sense on paper for whatever reason, but it doesn't work out. Everything he did, every decision he made in the playoffs worked, and it got him to a Stanley Cup. Every lineup decision worked. Mm-hmm. The only thing that didn't really work is a power play never took off, but that was a season-long thing, and I think it's going to take some time to figure that out. It's not something you're going to fix in the course of the playoffs. But everything else he did worked. And I know that I'm fully understanding that just sometimes that luck runs out. But to me, the reason you let go of a coach before a contract is up is if he's lost the locker
yep.
room. If you had to put money on it in the next 3 years, Craig Berube losing the locker room or not losing it at some point over the next 3 years, what are you going to put money on?
I would say with the current cast of characters and the fact that he has Ryan O'Reilly specifically in that room, but O'Reilly, Petrangelo, and he's got the buy-in of Alexander Steen, I would guess that he'll be able to maintain that ear. And that buy-in is something that Ken Hitchcock always tried to get, and that Berube, once January 1st came around, was able to get from the Blues.
I think a perfect example of that is a guy like Braden Schenn. Didn't have necessarily the numbers that he had a year ago. Numbers were a lot better. But, I mean, he was excelling in other areas and playing a position that maybe he's not the most comfortable playing for the good of the team. I mean, you take him out of the center ice position, put him on the left wing with O'Reilly and Tarasenko, and all of a sudden that turned out to be one of the best lines in hockey. And by his own admission, Braden Schenn admitted he'd rather, you know, play down the middle, but, you know, I'm going to do what's right for the team. And that just goes back to Craig Berube and the message that he was trying to sell.
And I would get if Braden Schenn, who was the number one center last season, was bothered by the fact that he wasn't the number one center anymore because he was displaced by O'Reilly. But one of the things that Berube did when he came in was went to every player and said, look, I'm going to need you to help me out here. And whether that's a guy like Steen moving to the fourth line or Schenn leaving the center position where he would rather play and moving up to number one line left wing, Berube was able to massage those players into thinking that, okay, this is best for the team and this is what it's all about.
And to me, that's independent of O'Reilly being on the team as far as getting him to buy into that. Because we're talking about the leadership on the ice and how much O'Reilly helped Vlad, for example, and just his presence and him being there helped Tarasenko become the player that he ultimately became this year. But I think there's a way he... And this is coming from somebody who's not in that dressing room. I don't really know exactly what he sounded like, other than the clips of videos we get of him pumping them up prior to a game or after. We don't really know exactly what he's like down there. But my impression of him is they listen, and there's a quality you have to have as a person to get people to listen to you in that way. And I think he just has it. While it helps to have team leaders who help, you know, spread that message or at least extend the message of the head coach, I don't know if he necessarily needs that to keep the locker room. I think he's just that good.
We asked Tony La Russa on Friday how much it meant for a manager to have his best player be his hardest worker. And that's why I mentioned O'Reilly, because Craig Berube has that guy that every single player on the team can look to, showing up an hour before practice is supposed to start, staying a half hour after, being on the ice a half hour before. When you're a coach and your best player is your hardest worker, you have such an advantage because nobody on the team can say, okay, I'll take this practice off.
Right, because you see the results and you see how it works. And you don't look at him and go, well, if he's the team leader or one of the team leaders and he's not coming in early, why should I do that?
Right.
I think that does help. And maybe I'm being a little bit Pollyanna about the whole thing because of the result. You know, they won the cup. No. But I have this immense confidence in him that I don't know if he's going to be the right guy for the job 6 years from now, but I know he is four now. And my expectation is he's going to be for the next few. You know, I don't really have much of a reason to think that whole dynamic is going to completely fall apart.
And let me provide one other anecdote. Tony La Russa made it a point when he was the Cardinal manager to talk to every single player every single day. He would find out how that player was feeling. He would walk around during BP with his fungo bat and talk to every single player. Dick Vermeil did that with his huge roster when he was the head coach of the Rams, made sure he talked to every single player every single day. There were reports that Mike Matheny kind of picked and chose who he communicated with at a high level and who he communicated with at a lower level and kind of played favorites. One of the things Berube does, and Lou Korak referenced this, he communicates with everybody. When a skate is over and they're stretching in their circle, he'll skate around and pop each and every one of them with the stick, saying, mm-hmm. Okay, I know you're here and you're a big part of this team.
Yes.
The communication level, like Lou said, not only with Tarasenko and O'Reilly, but with Blay and Sanford is similar.
He's not just doing that to guys who are in his image.
No.
He's doing it to everybody.
And he was that tough guy that sometimes you don't communicate with the 24th guy on the roster or the 12th forward on the roster. And he was that guy, so he understands the desire to be communicated with by the coach.
You know, and I'm sure you saw it by now, and I don't remember which exact video this is, but post Stanley Cup, it was, I believe it was a best of mic'd up. You know, there were a lot of mic'd up moments during the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. And one of the moments is during the handshake line when Zdeno Chara's coming up to Craig Berube and they shake hands. And you hear Chara say to him, "Thank you for everything you did for me." And that was when they played, when Chara was a young player.
Mm-hmm.
However long ago that was, it feels like 20 years ago. But it was a long time ago when they were teammates. And that's a reflection of who he is as a person, which is carried over to him now coaching. I have the utmost confidence in him as a coach.
Press conference to officially announce Berube as the full-time head coach tomorrow at 10 a.m. Hey, are you in need of a relaxing massage? We've got an idea for you, and it's not recommended by Robert Kraft. That's next before, what? With all due respect, on 101 ESPN.